This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 24th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature, catching up with broadcaster, author, and counselor David Berner, who is hosting a one-man show on March 30th in Vancouver. Plus the latest on the SNC-Lavalin scandal. And The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is new Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart eroding democracy at City Hall? The former political science professor presides over a city council that has announced a pilot plan to cut the maximum speaking time for each citizen from 5 minutes to 3 minutes at council meetings. Whenever City Hall says pilot, that means it's going to be made permanent. Exhibit A, all of the bike lanes. Apologists for the mayor will say that a 3 minute cap means 20 people could speak in an hour as opposed to a dozen. By that logic, you could have more than 7,000 people line up to recite one different word each in an hour and call that more democratic. But it wouldn't be. Special interest groups can pay thousands of dollars for their own lobbyist to arrange a private meeting with the mayor, or they can pay up to $1,200 to meet the mayor at a fundraiser. But leave that 5 minute cap alone. Few people can afford their own lobbyist or to make a donation to the mayor's campaign. Not everyone is skillful enough to make a speech that is less than 3 minutes. Some people have disabilities that make it difficult for them to fit their thoughts into a small time frame to begin with. Leave that 5 minute cap alone. It's the least you can do, Mayor Stewart. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the New Zealand Herald, Isaac Davidson reports, Al Noor Mosque reopens. The Herald was permitted to enter the mosque, where there was almost no evidence that an atrocity, where 42 people were killed by a terrorist, that had been committed a week earlier. Fresh white paint was still drying on the walls. The carpet had been ripped out and had not yet been replaced. A few rooms remained locked. Any bullet holes had been plastered over and erased. Broken windows had been replaced and painted over with an intricate design. Outside, new roses had been planted. Two men kneeled and prayed on the right-hand side of the mosque's main room. Four women prayed on the left. It was dead silent, with only a faint hum from the air conditioning and the distant rumble of traffic. Issa Khan from Hamilton said it meant everything to reopen the building, which is Christchurch's largest Islamic center. Quote, I will go in there, pray for the mosque, and pray for peace, he said. In the South China Morning Post, Sidney Leung and Zhang Pingwei report, Chinese chemical plant survivors relive horror of earth-shattering blast. The blast in Jiangsu province killed at least 64 people and injured 640 more. The death toll was expected to rise over the weekend due to the serious injuries suffered by some of those caught in the blast. One worker at the Jiangsu Tianjiayi chemical plant, where the explosion occurred, told the media that it had been caused by a tanker delivering natural gas and catching fire. Wang Qinfang said shards of glass from the windows had been falling like rain in a village 6 kilometers away from the plant. She had been out shopping at the time of the explosion and had immediately run out of the store to escape the falling debris and flying glass. She later found one member of her family crushed dead in the rubble of their home near the site, while her own house in the neighboring village of Halinju had suffered damage to the walls and roof. Li Hongmai, a hotel owner from Chenjigang, said she had seen a 3-year-old boy being thrown into the air by the force of the shock wave that had left him visibly terrified. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Rob Davis reports, Polluted by Money, How Oregon Could Control the Influence of Campaign Cash. Here are three ways that other states have attempted to minimize the influence of campaign cash on elected officials. 1. Limiting the flow of money to politicians' campaigns. Oregon is one of five states without any limit on the amount anyone can donate to someone running for office. Whether you're a candidate for the Clackamas Soil and Water Conservation District or a front runner for governor, businesses, labor unions, or individuals can give your campaign as much as they want. 2. Strictly controlling how campaign money can be spent. In Oregon, campaign money isn't just spent on campaigning. It is paid for luxury hotel rooms, weekly visits to the local sports bar, and a variety of wearable Apple accessories. It paid for Salem lodging and meals that taxpayers already covered for legislative sessions, boosting lawmakers' income. It even bought one departing lawmaker a year of Amazon Prime. 3. Strictly enforcing tight rules once money is in the system. Oregon's election watchdog, the Oregon State Elections Division, has subpoena authority, but does not use it. Its compliance specialists instead write letters asking questions. More than once, they dropped a case because no one wrote back. Fines are lower here than in other West Coast states. California's top fine is $1 million. In Washington, it's $18 million, which is pending in court. Oregon's biggest fine? $116,000. And in the Seattle Times, Nicole Berdur reports, Woman sets world record in Seattle for calculating the value of pi to 31.4 trillion decimal places. Of course, Emma Haruko Awau ate some pie on Pi Day. After 121 days using 25 virtual machines and 170 terabytes of data, about the same amount found in the print collections of the entire Library of Congress, Awau had calculated the most accurate value of pi to 31.4 trillion digits, or pi, multiplied by 10 to the 13th power. The previous record, set in 2016, calculated pi to 22.4 trillion digits. Congratulations on the new Guinness World Record. And last week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Judge expresses frustration with Meng Wanzhou court circus. Richmond auto detailer in court battle reveals scheme to avoid foreign buyer tax. And bureaucrat in charge of new liberal mortgage scheme opposed similar BC program in 2016. Read the stories behind these headlines in TheBreaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Our special guest this week is David Berner, a Vancouver broadcaster, author, and counselor. He is starring in his own one-man show, March 30th, at the Powell Studio Theatre in Vancouver. Thanks for joining us, David. We should talk about weather and politics. The last day of winter was as hot as the first day of summer. March is supposed to come in like a lamb and out like a lion. What do you think of all this?
Well, I of course I love it. I mean, I think we've all had enough rain and snow and dark skies and so on, and it's great. I mean, I've been out on the tennis court. I've been walking like crazy and shifted to summer clothes. I mean, I haven't shifted to spring clothes. I shifted to summer clothes. It's typical Vancouver mentality, you know. You'll see people wearing shorts in February because we're trying to convince the gods to move along, you know. But no, I think it's great. I do think about climate change and those kinds of serious issues. But when a beautiful spring day comes along with 15 above, you know, and the tennis courts are packed, I'm a happy camper.
Of course, there's this debate that's been boiling up and down the West Coast, especially here in BC, about getting rid of daylight saving time, getting rid of the time change, having one time all year round.
Hasn't daylight saving been around forever? I mean, it seems to me, I'm 76, it seems to me it's been around since I was a kid. So I don't really care. I mean, it is a kind of annoyance, but it's one of those sort of Canadian things that, oh yeah, spring forward, fall back. Yeah, okay, I got to change all the clocks. Of course, these days, half the clocks change themselves. So it's not such a big pain in the ass, you know, because your cell phone changes, the TV changes, your computers change, all that stuff changes by itself. So you're left with the stove and the microwave. Well, what kind of tragedy is that?
And here we are, and let's talk politics. Both sides of the border, crazy things happening. Donald Trump in the United States, the Mueller report has been submitted to those who need the report, and we'll see what happens next with Donald Trump and whether things might get worse for him, impeachment or even worse.
Today, MSNBC, which I watch often from late afternoon until early evening, they covered it, you know, like a blanket, as you knew they would. But you know what nobody said, which baffles me? You have this entire process where you've got Mueller, and he's got a team of 150 investigators and lawyers, and they're all people with resumes at the FBI and the CIA, and they submit 850,000 pages of documentation and so on. And then to show how fragile and often stupid democracy can be, the entire package is given to one guy named Bill Barr. And everybody has to sit and wait for this one schmo to decide what's going to happen. Why is it that that doesn't make any democratic sense that one guy should have that much power? You know, so who knows what he'll do? But I think, you know, there are a lot of people who believe that Trump will get away with everything. And he'll probably he might be defeated in 2020. He might even be reelected. But even if he's defeated, he'll walk away laughing. I'm not one of those people. I think sooner or later he's going to get the bite. And I certainly hope he does, because he's a detestable person.
Well, one person with too much power north of the border is Justin Trudeau, and he could be defeated or he could get reelected in 2019. But this SNC-Lavalin scandal is not going away even after the federal budget this week. The Liberals thought that would be their great way to change the channel. It wasn't.
Yeah, aren't you just sort of appalled and when you hear him hemming and hawing and trying to change the subject to all the good things we're doing? Like, he get some balls, get some cojones, and, you know, deal with this. You know, of course, there's no way he can deal with it, because what he and his minions did was wrong. They quite clearly tried to beat up on this minister and tell her to not proceed with a criminal case. And it's all about politics. He went as far as saying, you know, my writings in Quebec. You know, it's all about politics. It has nothing to do with the sanity or the moral virtue or the health of Canadians. Lanolin, I've been calling it Lanolin for years. Lanolin is a greasy company. It always has been. And they are the sister of Bombardier, who built all these sky trains. And I want to know who has the cement contract, because all of those cement pillars, you know, you got to ask yourself, here's a good example of why Lanolin and Bombardier are so corrupt. The city of Richmond spent umpteen million dollars redoing number 3 road, which is their main artery, a street I will never drive down. If my life depends on it, I would never drive down number 3. So I do go to Richmond. Mostly I go through Richmond to get to Steveston to have coffee and walk along the Fraser River. But to get there, I use number 1 or number 2 road. But anyway, they spent millions redoing number 3 road. And was it a year or 2 years later? They tore it all up to put in these cement pillars for SkyTrain. Now, anybody with a brain knows that a street level light rapid transit is the way to go. It costs 1/10 the price of SkyTrain. I was in Dublin a couple of years ago, and Dublin has a street level city transportation system that's a dream. You stand at the stop, and it's got all these electronics telling you that the next tram is coming in 2 minutes, and it does, and it arrives, and it's silent. Nobody crashes into it. I don't know. I was there for over a week. I didn't read one story in the paper about a car crashing into the into the light rapid transit. So I think that's a good example of the corruption, you know, and we keep feeding Bombardier just to keep ourselves, keep Quebec in Confederation. And I think I'm like a lot of Canadians. I love Quebec. I love the French culture, the Franco-Canadian culture. And of course I want Quebec to be a part of Canada. But I'm just like a lot of people who say, look, if you keep telling me you're divorcing me or you're leaving, I'm packing a bag for you. Get out.
And want to finish off this interview as you get ready for your March 30th one-man show in Vancouver. Tell me a funny story, a good short story.
Well, I'll tell you two very quick ones. So the very first person I ever interviewed on CJOR, the old Jimmy Pattison station, was Soupy Sales. And I'm a mad fan of Soupy Sales. And I got him on the phone from, I think, from New York. And the very first thing I said to him once we got all organized, I said, Soup, I have to tell you that my biggest comedy heroes are Benny, Burns, and Burl. Now, you're right up there, so my question to you is, how come your name don't start with a B? And he loved it. He howled. Anyway, I recorded 50 minutes of brilliant, wonderful, fun conversation. He had me in stitches. I said goodbye, and it was the very first time I'd ever used this equipment. And then I rewound the tape, because that's, you know, it wasn't what we use today. It was reel-to-reel tape. I rewound it, I pressed play, and I let it play for 10 minutes with no sound.
Oh.
And then I looked at the machine and realized there was a red button I hadn't pushed.
Oh.
So I phoned him, and I said, Soup, you're not going to believe this. He said, you didn't record it. I said, it's my first day at this station. I've never used this equipment before. I should never be allowed near equipment. I'm a complete technophobe, you know? And he said, you want me to do this again, don't you? I said, I'm begging you. He said, start the effing tape. And he did it, and he was equally funny. That's a pretty good story.
Well, thanks very much for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. It's David Berner, who's having a one-man show in Vancouver at the PAL studio March 30th. Go to davidberner.com for more information.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No! Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The Trudeau Liberal government tabled its pre-election budget on March 19th, and guess what? It didn't balance itself. During the 2015 election campaign, Justin Trudeau promised to balance the budget by 2019. Finance Minister Bill Morneau delivered a budget that will be almost $20 billion in the red. This coincided with Trudeau shutting down the Justice Committee hearings into the SNC-Lavalin scandal. Former Attorney General Jody Wilson-Raybould will not get a second chance to testify. The Conservative opposition drowned out Morneau with chants of let her speak.
Investing in the middle class. The title should come as no surprise, Mr. Speaker, because investing in the middle class began with our first day in office, and it's what we've been doing every single day since. Investing in the middle class means good, well-paying jobs today, and the promise of a better future, even in a world filled with change. The interpreter apologizes. She cannot hear the minister.
On March 20th, Conservative and NDP MPs challenged Trudeau in question period. He answered every question in French and unsuccessfully tried to change the channel back to the budget. NDP leader Jagmeet Singh.
Mr. Speaker, will the Prime Minister guarantee that Canadians will hear from everyone involved before the next election?
Here, here, here. Honorable Prime Minister.
Once again,
I'd like to wish a happy International Day of the Francophonie to my honorable colleague, and I'd also like to remind him about the rules of this place. The committee itself decides what its agenda is and what they're going to do as a committee. It's not for the leaders of parties to direct what committees do. We here on this side of the House, we respect the independence of committees, and we will always do so. When it comes to pharmacare, we're very proud of the $500 million we've earmarked to help families facing rare diseases, to help them afford their drugs.
Calgary Conservative Michelle Rempel.
Oh no, Mr. Speaker. What this Prime Minister is doing, the only thing that he has been doing, is moving hell and high water to protect a company that stands accused of bribing Muammar Gaddafi's sons with prostitutes. And he's been doing that while muzzling strong, principled women. That's not what a feminist looks like. No. That's not walking the talk. Every day that he refuses to allow the Attorney General to testify and tell her story is another day he's a fake feminist. Why has he got her on a muzzle?
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'm so happy that we're talking about women's rights because this government has invested millions and millions of dollars in helping women all across the country, and we'll keep on doing just that. It's the Conservatives who keep voting against our measures for equality between the sexes and giving more opportunities to entrepreneurial women. We will continue investing in women all across the country and around the world. It's a priority in order to build a better world for all.
Ontario NDP MP Charlie Angus.
We now learn from the CEO of SNC-Lavalin that 9,000 jobs were never at risk. To say that they're going to be unemployed is not true, he said. And yet this Prime Minister has misled his caucus, the House, and Canadians day after day after day, because it was never about jobs. It was about helping his wealthy friends, about shutting down the Justice Committee, and that he has tried to cover up his interference in an independent public prosecution. He has broken faith with the Canadian people. Why is he so afraid of an investigation into his actions in making up the facts around the SNC lobbying?
Honourable Prime Minister.
What Canadians expect, Mr. Speaker, is us to work to protect jobs and workers, with full respect for our institutions, and that's precisely what we're doing. We will keep investing in workers. We will keep helping Canadians, for example, with the investments we're making in training, Mr. Speaker. In the budget we tabled yesterday, Canadians will be able to have access and time for training so that they can better prepare themselves for the jobs and opportunities of the future. That is paving the way for the future for workers and Canadians. That's what we're doing.
Chilliwack Conservative Mark Strawl.
Here's some quotes, Mr. Speaker. The former Attorney General, I quit. The former President of the Treasury Board, I quit. The former top advisor to the Prime Minister, I'm gone. The former Clerk of the Privy Council, I quit. Mr. Speaker, these members have all quit because of the scandal that emanated from the very top of this government. The Liberals have tried to shut this down time and time again. Will the Prime Minister and his officials finally have the decency to show up at the Ethics Commission, the Ethics Committee, and do their job, explain to Canadians what they're so afraid of when it comes to the SNC-Lavalin scandal?
Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, as I said, we will always cooperate with parliamentary committees that decide independently what studies they want to undertake. But allow me to continue with quotes. Perry Melgard of the Assembly of First Nations said that this federal budget shows that there will be significant and sustained investments to advance the priorities of First Nations. And throughout the country, Mr. Speaker, we have heard constituents and Canadians say, thank you for investments in the middle class. Thank you for access to affordable housing. Thank you for investments in infrastructure, in high-speed internet. That will help us.
The Ethics Committee, chaired by Conservative Bob Zimmer, will investigate the so-called Lav scam. Jody Wilson-Raybould, the Vancouver Granville Liberal MP, is submitting a written brief to the Justice Committee, and her friend in caucus, Jean Philpott, told Maclean's that she has much more to say. The SNC-Lavalin scandal, it shows no signs of ending. We'll keep you posted on the Breaker.News podcast.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No! Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The virtual Nanamo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanamo Bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to NDP Solicitor General Mike Farnworth for announcing almost $19 million to BC's search and rescue volunteer groups over the next 3 years. The 2,500 people who risked their lives to help people who get lost in British Columbia's wilderness were left out of the February provincial budget. Now they have funding over the next 3 years for deployment, training, gear, and insurance. In a growing province with a booming tourism industry, the time is now to start thinking of making search and rescue a professional occupation. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanamo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for March 24th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on March 24th in 1921, the first Women's Olympiad opened in Monte Carlo, a five-day multi-sport event held in protest of the International Olympic Committee's decision to exclude women from the 1924 Olympics? 100 athletes from France, Italy, Switzerland, United Kingdom, and Norway competed. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Be like Vicky Drader, Barbara May, Daniel McElroy, Deborah Jones, Laura Galanders, Mark Spire, and Monday Redman. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.